you are one of us. Your passion is the world of mountain biking, from enduro to gravel races and everything in between. This is Insider MTB, the podcast that takes you behind the handlebars, into the dirt, and behind the scenes of the mountain biking world. And now your host, Austin White.
Maybe we need to add Ann Spencer Rathkamp.
No, not at all.
We need to add it.
I just got a notification
that we're
live on YouTube. Can you believe it?
All of our followers we have. It's probably why.
Can you believe it?
Millions. Yeah. Millions. Incredible. We're going to go big one day. But until then, this is episode 16. I'm Austin White, your host today and for every day and for all of them. And then we got Spencer Rathkamp here joining me.
That's me.
Team Coca-Cola, Thule, Team Waterworld,
Team. I'm your co-host today. And every day.
And every day.
And everything in between.
Oh, there we go. Gravel racing.
All right.
All right, you guys. We got a cool one for you. Welcome to the podcast. Sorry about that one. But yeah, we got some new stuff I'm trying to introduce. We're going to try some new stuff. Maybe we'll piss some stuff off. Maybe it'll work. Maybe not. I don't know. I feel like we need to add a little extra flavor to the podcast. So, yeah. And then we have a special guest coming on with us this afternoon, but yeah. Recording, and it's Elizabeth Walker of Live Factory or Live Racing Team Manager, and we're gonna ask her some UCI stuff, some different things about women racing, and just all that little stuff. So yeah, but we've got a few things I want to get into. First up, let's talk Red Bull Rampage.
The quickest way to die on a bike, right there. I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. Come on.
You're alive. You're on the podcast. So that's all that matters.
Yeah, I didn't care.
Yeah, how are you doing, Spencer?
Maybe we hopped into that.
Yeah, actually, how are you doing? You okay? I'm sorry. For everyone who doesn't know, I just shot all this morning with Spencer. And then, you know, he took me on the best lunch date anyone could ever go on. He has this sweet little cafe. It's called Urbane. And yeah, he has... He's introduced me to the good food, you know. I felt wined and dined.
Sponsor us.
Yeah.
It's a local spot. You can find me there a couple times.
Yeah,
a week.
They literally know his name.
We got there.
Hey Spencer, I know your order already.
Yep.
He just orders and the food just it's crazy.
I try to throw him a few curveballs every now and then.
No, you don't. You just order extra chocolate chip cookies. That's your curveball.
They're so good. No, I switch up the sandwiches.
Oh, you switched it. No, you didn't.
Yeah. No, I did.
What'd you get this time that was different?
I got the SoCal. I don't always get the SoCal.
I never seen you get a bowl. That would be throwing
I don't get a bowl.
Curveball. No.
Got in the salad a few times. It's good.
So, I mean,
anyways.
Yeah. How are you doing, Spencer? Tell people how we're doing. Yeah. Tell them how you're doing.
Rampage was sick. It was definitely a pretty groundbreaking year, I think. As we had our last guest on, George Astle, women first time in Rampage, that was pretty sweet. And then 2 days later, the men went off and television part of it was a little different for the women, but first year, I think it got off to a pretty good start overall for the women. And then the guys competition, I think, although the wind hold was a little crazy, I think it was, in my opinion, one of the better rampages I've seen overall. It seemed pretty good. It seemed like everyone was pretty hyped. The ending and the way that, it seemed like people were understanding or taking the judging was a little mixed and a little mixed reviewed, but overall,
I mean, isn't there some drama with that?
Yeah, that's where I was kind of going with that. But overall, I think the event and the energy at the event was pretty
okay. So before we get into any of the drama stuff, but congrats to Georgia our episode 15 guest. Thanks for the hookup on that, Spencer. Super rad.
Yeah, we're
you
stoked.
Guys must bond over coffee. And I as an alternate getting in and then get second, pretty rad. And then was on our podcast. It was probably being on our podcast. We gave her just that little extra push. I'm going to take some credit. I was just giving her some tips, how to ride the stuff. All my experience of just doing Red Bull Rampage in the past gets you a second place. So if anyone needs it for the future, besides that, pretty fucking gnarly to watch.
Yeah.
I feel like, right?
Absolutely. No, she crushed it. That was super sick. And yeah, I didn't even think about going from an alternate to second. I think that's just a testament to the level of riding that the women are bringing these days. Everyone's pretty competitive and they're getting better and better. And I think honestly, if outside of a few even men, the alternates that come in could easily come in and land on the podium or do super well. It's exciting. I think it's as a whole super exciting for the sport and for the industry, because outdoor industry needs some more energy in it and hype right now with current.
I mean, I hope that they doubled numbers, right? Having women and men on there. I mean, I don't know if it's doubled the numbers of viewership, but went up probably, right? I mean, that's good for the sport of cycling, which seems to be, I don't know, any industry right now that's just crushing it, but cycling is not in the greatest of spots. I think it's having its comeback. Maybe we're on our comeback tour right now.
I wouldn't say it's necessarily on a comeback. I think it's just kind of found its way back to where it was pre-COVID, and the numbers have kind of come down off of the super high peak, and we have to get used to how it was before COVID, because all these businesses benefited immensely for the last couple of years, and we're just cranking away, and now we have way too much inventory, and we're seeing the old reset button kind of really get pushed and held for 10 seconds, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I feel it on Facebook Marketplace. It's just working me over.
Me too, man. Nothing's selling. Come on.
Yeah. Spencer sells bikes like crazy. Gives me crap because I can never sell a bike on there. And then right now he's having trouble selling a bike. So I gave him so much crap today about it. I felt good. It just hit me hard right here.
Yeah. But I don't know. I was just on the phone with somebody else, and I feel like people are just going to have to get a lot more selective and smart with how they're doing their marketing and how the industry is working, because I firsthand have heard that a couple businesses and bike shops and stuff are actually crushing it right now, while others that haven't kind of evolved or changed their plans and their purchasing numbers and stuff, it's those are the ones that are struggling worse. But I think there's opportunity, not just for me and you, but for the whole industry, and hopefully the new wave of shredding women kind of help stabilize where all the rest of us were.
All right, so back to Red Bull Rampage. I'm a little bit blown away because let's categorize it as downhill a little bit, right? Something along that line.
Free ride.
Yeah, your dual crown. You should be winning with dual crown. One on an enduro style bike. Is that the best way to say it? Is the times changing? Is it? What is it? Why? How? I don't know. I guess the tough part is you show someone maybe who's outside of the sport and you're like, you need to have the most suspension to not die on this course. And then a guy wins it with not the most suspension.
Yeah. I mean, that's
topic of controversy there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yes and no. I think, one, it's a testament to how good the bikes are getting. Two, it has a lot to do with the rider's confidence and the tools that he's putting under him. Brandon Semenuk, our winner, won on a single crown fork. It's not his first time doing that, though. He has competed, and I think he's won on a single crown fork in the past. I mean, I don't know. It's he's doing things on his single crown bike that a lot of people aren't doing. Nobody else in Rampage is doing backflip tail whips in general. And I think that's overall pretty impressive, and it's upping his ante. And I think we're seeing the technicality that he brings in the results with obviously winning. And I think the controversy in riding that bike doesn't necessarily bring up any controversial points by just him riding it alone, but rather the way he's riding it is not as traditional, I guess, as some would say. Maybe he's not hitting the biggest drops, hitting this massive front flip like Tom Van Steenbergen did, but he's also tricking more things. He's got a lot more features in his line, so on and so forth. So I don't know. It's one of the fallbacks, I think, of any judged sports as a whole. It's very much up to the viewer's discretion on what wins. And obviously you're seeing a bunch of pushback against Brendan Fairclough with his line getting last. I think he did get last or something. He and a lot of other people think he deserves to be much higher than that, and maybe he does. I mean, all of those guys, all of their lines are incredible. He did some insanely sick things that I would never do, but it's not our decision. And all the judges.
Maybe what you're trying to say is that it's all gnarly. How do you decide which one categorizes as gnarlier, almost, right? When me and you maybe have a distinct definition, a different definition of what is gnarlier. So then it's judge wise score. It's weird. It's hard to see someone cross the finish line and not be like, this is the actual direct position they deserved it. Or, you know what I mean? Like if it was a race, it's not, I just like you said with judging, I guess that's kind of your point, right? Like,
well, that is your judging of
it is that it should be Brandon Fairclough should be higher, right? And yeah, that's what everyone's kind of, all these different areas of riders are saying that. And it's just like, I don't know, maybe, I mean, a tail whip should only be 5 points. You know what I'm saying? Or like, but doing a bigger gap, I don't know. Is there like maybe a better point structure version that should be released, do you think? I mean, how do you solve this situation?
There's no solving it. This is the nature that comes inherently with judge sports.
Yeah.
No matter what it is, if you watch X Games or Rampage or whatever.
Joyride.
It is up to the people that are sitting in the booth to deem collectively. There's five of them. It's not just one guy. They are all talking in this together. And the people that are judging Rampage are all extremely decorated athletes. They're the best of the best. They know what's going on. And it's just like Emil Johansson in Joyride and doing all the slope style events is unfortunately, Brandon Semenuk and Emil Johansson are so good at what they do that it makes everything look easy. So it makes their run look tamed down, in my opinion. Tom Van Steenbergen, not taking anything away from that guy. Absolutely incredible. Super sick. Godziak, insane runs. I mean, like, absolutely badass. The one thing I would say maybe to Tom Van Steenbergen's fault is that because he's doing one big front flip that is absolutely massive, he's getting down the mountain that much faster, and that takes out that much more elevation to trick or add new features or do certain things. And I don't know. I feel like that might have overall hurt him. And then Brendan's run, I think, is one of the most controversial runs of the whole thing. And it's sick to somebody who just likes mountain biking for the raw nature of the ride. I think that his run looks the most fun, looks the most playful. He's slashing down natural terrain and then hopping on that big rock and then doing a tribute drop to finish for Jordy and like doing all this stuff that tickles the hearts of the fans, pulls on the heartstrings of the fans, but might not be the gnarliest. He lost 300 feet of elevation just going down a single track, basically, which I'm not taking anything away from it, but I don't know. It's controversial. I got in a little, not arguments, but just discussions on Instagram with a couple people because
you did an Austin White.
People were voicing, hey, I was respectful. And I was not.
So
anyways. Anyways.
Tell us.
Yeah, yep. I had a couple good conversations with people that think in ways that I see, but I don't necessarily. I'm trying to see it from the perspective of the judges, and the judges ultimately make
it's a hard job if you're a judge, right?
And it's impossible. It's impossible to do it right, really, because just like everything, the state of the world, man, everyone just focuses on the negative, and it's unfortunate. Like, no matter what, we were talking about this at lunch, no matter what it is, if it's the best rider winning effortlessly, it's a problem. Or if it's a guy that is the most decorated guy in the world and he's winning everything, but then he's got no personality on the podium, it's a bad thing. It's like, we're not really celebrating the positives in our current.
It's rough.
Social.
You want the realist, but then you can't handle it sometimes. And then you don't like it when they're not giving you the realist. And I don't know. It's weird times. We had that talk. I don't know. Every other podcast probably talked about it. So we don't need to go too deep into it. But I mean, that kind of sums up Red Bull Rampage, I feel like.
What are your thoughts on it?
On Rampage? Or...
Yeah. What was your
I
was
have
your
a
opinion?
Hard time watching the whole thing live. Okay. If that and maybe it kind of goes back to the judging format and a quick attention. And maybe it's also coming from a racing. Everything is driven by racing from what I came from in motocross. So it's tough for me to just see someone roll to the finish line and not know if they won or not right then. This is why I love pump track. Pump track to me and dual slalom are just, man, they're up there. That's my thing to love to watch, because the head-to-head, you know, right then. So it's tough for me on some of that type of stuff. But it's a pretty big staple, if that makes sense, like in the sport and gnarly. And
Yeah. It's one of the biggest, really.
Yeah. So I know I'm probably going to get shot for this, but I'll just hand my opinion on this. The women stuff, I don't know if we're fully there yet. Like, it's gnarly. I would never ride the shit. Let's just be real. I'm not even there. But it's also a little bit tough. Like, they're, like, almost dying because it's that gnarly. Do we figure out a... I mean, it's probably just, it's a development. It's going to take years. Like, this is it kind of maybe. I wasn't here for the first ever Red Bull Rampage. I don't know what it was like at the beginning. Was it just, how do we get to the bottom?
Absolutely. No, it was. It totally was. This is the start, man. It was Josh Bender and a couple other people, Cedric Gracia, that were just sending themselves down the mountains. And I don't know. I think the women.
I'm just saying is like, it's obviously seems to be a little tough for the women. In the sense and on just getting enough to get to the competition, like, you know, you have a lot of men that are willing to go for it, right? And you have a stacked field, and the women, we're just developing that, and it's kind of new. So it's a little bit harder to kind of keep with it. I don't know how to explain it the best way without taking it wrong or whatever, but it is like they didn't want to do their second runs and things like that. Like, is that because it was just so gnarly? Were they not wanting to keep go? I don't know. Those are all just kind of question marks a little bit. And maybe we need to have someone on and talk about that a little bit more. But like, it was kind of some of the stuff, like, dude, it just looked gnarly. And you could see it in their body language a little bit more when they're riding. And I don't know, like, it's tough. Like, and then you watch the men that just, you don't even see the body language and you're like, what the fuck just happened right there? How he ripped through that and did something. So it's a little wild seeing the difference in levels, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think that's the nature of progression though. Honestly, I would have definitely liked to see them all do. And like I said, we weren't there. We don't know what was going on. We probably wouldn't be riding this if it were me and you, I probably wouldn't go down any of the lines.
Not probably. I'm out.
And not trying to take away anything that they did, but I would have definitely liked to have seen a second run and some fire trying to knock off old Robin, because Robin is insane. She crushed it. And Unfortunately, Chelsea was the one that went up for a second run and crashed again, Chelsea Kimball, but she could have maybe rivaled Robin a little bit. But I would have liked to have seen a little more fire and passion from some of the ladies to go try to win, but it's the first one. It's cool. I think it's a good foundation for them, and they'll keep progressing. I think, as more chicks get in and more girls are pushing the limits and pushing each other to ride gnarlier stuff and do cooler things, I think, yeah.
And overall, I'm by no way saying that I don't want that. I mean, it's wild a little bit, like how gnarly it is. And maybe that just actually showed a little bit more of the depth of gnarliness, maybe, you know?
Yeah. I think it's so hard not to just compare it directly to the men's deal, because now it's the same name, it's the same event.
Yes.
And that's it's not fair, honestly, because it's not fair to just be like, we expect a men's version for the women's field.
I guess
as well,
I was expecting, exactly, like them when they have their first one, just to be doing triple aerosol black flip up to another one footer, knack. I don't, you know, that's the tough part, right?
It
takes time. Don't get me wrong, you know. I think afterwards, when it's all done, both of them are done, they just need to have the fans start at the top and run to the bottom, and the first one through the corral wins. That's just, give them a pair of handlebars, they have to run in the first one through. That's just, I don't know if insurance covers that, not 100%.
Sure. I bet that's gnarlier than Rush.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Live stream that, because that's what I fucking want to watch. Is the shit, right? Come on. You know?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I thought it was pretty entertaining. I thought it was good.
Yeah.
I think it was a little harder to watch overall. There were some bigger energy lulls, but at the same time, it's unfortunate. I mean, it's the nature of a live sport like that. The
wind you hold, have so much stuff to go against, right?
Yeah, the dirt condition, the wind hold in the men's competition was gnarly. I mean, it was like a 6-hour hold, honestly, and it I don't know exactly how long it was, but
it's hard for a broadcast.
Yeah, it's so hard. They were live the entire time. I went for a bike ride, I got dinner, came back, and it was second runs were just starting, and I'm like, dude, it sucks. And I had it on in the background mostly of my day. Like, I'd be doing something and I'd hear, okay, you're next dropping in 5-4 Tyler McCall, whatever. Boom, then I'd be like, click over to the tab, watch a run, and pop in, pop out. But
that's how you watch Red Bull Rampage, right?
Yeah. It's cool. It's the sickest event. It's what everybody that has no idea about mountain biking knows. When I tell people, I ride mountain bikes, they're like, oh, you do Rampage?
I'm like, it's like when you tell Moto, you do the loops.
Close. So it's cool. And the industry needs it. And stoked for the chicks, stoked for the dudes, stoked for the sport.
Cool.
And
all right. Yeah. Enough of that. Rebel Rampage. I like it. Good answer. All right, cool. We're going to add something new to the podcast. It's podcast voicemail. Spencer's not fully stoked on this idea. I don't know. We're going to get some weird shit. But look, we want to engage a little bit more with the fans than we can. And so ideas. I just got this phone number. You just call it. Leave a voicemail. Good, bad, funny. Give us some hot hits. I don't know. Don't be too crazy. We just want to hear some shit. We'll play it on the radio. I'm not guaranteeing that every single one's going to make it if you're out of control and crazy. But I want to play it maybe on the next episode type of thing. That phone number, and I'll throw it into the...
Hold on.
Go ahead.
Little clarification here. Somebody, and I'm asking you this because I don't know. Anybody can call this phone number. Leave a voicemail, and now we discuss about it, whether it's like asking questions to us, talking shit, telling who they want to see on the podcast, and then we discuss that.
Yeah, we'll play it, and then we can talk about it afterwards.
Okay, cut.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, it's kind of the best way to maybe kind of get a part of it. I don't know. Give the fans a moment. As long as it's within the realm, right? Like, you're crazy. You ain't getting on. Sorry. Like, and I mean, you got to be pretty crazy.
You're crazy and you're on here, dude.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I mean. You got to be really crazy. So let's don't be that crazy. Just be Austin crazy. And all right. Look, the phone number is 805 817-3123. And it's a plus one for American. I mean, we don't have a lot of European, except for we have 1 euro listening right now. But
1 euro? Or one?
No, I guess New Zealand, Kiwi. Right? Kiwi. Okay. Yep. Shout out DVO over there. And I don't know how to say the local thing. I just know New Zealand. Sorry. I suck. I failed.
Hey, thanks, you're European. That's crazy.
Well, not on the island that I'm currently on. How about that? We'll go with that. Cool. That's signed, sealed, delivered. That phone number again, plus 1-805-817-3123. Hit it. Drop us a voicemail. Have some cool stuff. The cooler you are, the better you're going to get on it.
We'll post it in the caption of the video and stuff. So
totally. On to the next piece. Should we go Keegan Swenson, your $30,000 winner of the Lifetime Series? Okay.
Does it surprise you? No, yeah. I get it.
I don't know. It kind of surprised me. Not a lot, but like a little bit after, you know, what happened midway through the season.
But that wasn't clearly anything enough to derail him. I mean, he destroyed. Yeah. He crushed. He's the best, endurance.
3 years
in
running,
the US.
3 years winner. Yeah.
Is it over in
that class? Like, what do you. Not. I mean, like,
sounds
what do you
like,
do? It's like Jed
like,
Lawrence.
Exactly. That's where I was going to go with that. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. He doesn't surprise me at all doing that, coming out performing. He's the clear standout and the winner of that for a reason. And
Sophia, 2-time.
Yep, freshman.
So I mean, power couple there. But besides that, I mean, what do you do to win that?
To beat him?
Yes. How?
Be better.
Yeah, but I mean,
don't know.
It's like
I never
you ride more miles. What do you literally do? Is there you get his trainer? Can you get his trainer? How does all those things work to get better in that? Right? Because it's so new too, right?
No.
Well, that area, if that makes like of racing,
I mean,
ish.
No, I would argue that it's not new. It's the same endurance based racing like a Tour de France would be.
Okay.
Keegan's
a little different,
it.
Though, he's right?
Yeah, I understand. I mean, it is to an extent. It's a more well rounded racer now with the mountain bike implementations of like Leadville and then Big Sugar or whatever and all the other races. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's the strongest rider. Yeah, but it's the strongest rider. It's very endurance based, and he's.
So then how do you beat that? Is that you have to be stronger or smarter and use tactics, have a teammate like he does? Like, those are the questions I kind of have. Like, is it just going to be a runaway for a few years until he just gets too old and you can't run away with it? Like, is that what we're looking
at? Until somebody else shows up that can rival him. I mean, he's coming to his own. And I think that there are I genuinely think that there are people out there that can beat him.
Some Euros, maybe?
Yeah, for sure. There's stronger athletes out there.
Again,
it's not to take anything away from Keegan. I think he's
obviously. Oh, we're not saying that. I'm just saying.
But until somebody comes and even gives him a little competition, I hope for his sake he keeps running with that sucker.
Because let's be real. There's not. I don't see a direct threat, if that makes sense, right now. So then how do you get up on that board and be a direct threat?
Yeah, they got to be better. They got to be working harder than him. I know he puts in the time and takes everything super seriously, and now he's got a new shaving company sponsoring him or something. But
are you guys
sick.
Teammates again? Are you guys? No.
No.
Shaving? I don't know. What's the? You have the soap.
Yeah,
you have the soap-sponsored guy.
I
need to get some of that soap. All right.
Every man Jack.
Share the love.
Plug,
why you gotta keep it?
What is Keegan sponsored by now?
But yeah, so
Bolt Skin Shave.
Bolt Skin Shave.
Bolt
okay.
Skin and Shave.
They got the helmet. Yeah. But I mean, it's wild. It's a little bit wild to me. It's a little bit of a Jet Lawrence type of situation. There isn't
absolutely.
Anyone
absolutely.
Really giving him a strong run for his money. And yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's
crushing.
Yeah.
Crushing.
Absolutely. So that leads to my next one. We're going to announce that Spencer is now into the running of lifetime. He's going to race it all next year.
Slow down.
You slow down. Come on.
I'll just be the sweep, essentially. Hours behind Keegan. Everywhere, hours behind. You know? Yeah, I'll follow him with an e-bike with battery swaps every.
Dude, so I did it. Okay, so I had this idea one time, and you know JJ. Yep. JJ is my buddy, filmer. He's actually been on the podcast as a co-host. JJ is not the best cyclist in the world. Strongest for nice. Sure not. No. Nice. He's from Arizona, not much elevation. Not saying that's a thing, but I'm saying like he lived in
so Phoenix. Are you?
Yeah, but my cycling career started in California. So minus that. JJ, and then we have Kathy Pruitt, who was racing the Lifetime Series at the time. We were doing a photo shoot. Can't remember. She was on it. I'm like, hey, what can we do to set some weird boundary? It's a 100-mile race. Kathy takes off. JJ takes off on an e-bike. An e-bike clearly can't go 100 miles.
Yep.
Does he get one battery swap but has to wait 20 minutes? Where do we hit this line to where it comes to a balance of a great race? Where it's like, who will win?
Keegan.
Yeah.
Keegan wins.
Keegan
honestly
would still win.
Yeah, because dude, if especially at most of these races, they're going faster than 20 miles an hour.
Yeah, you tap out. That's what was the other part of it. Like, okay, so you're tapped out.
You'll beat them up Columbine probably if you're at race in Leadville, and that's about it. I think he's got you everywhere else. He's making up more ground on everything else than...
I think that would be an awesome segment. I can't get someone to bite on it, but I think that would be awesome. You give the guy who's not the greatest cyclist an e-bike. He has to race someone like a Keegan, but he gets one battery swap, 100 miles, 80, I don't know.
One battery swap
ain't
getting
two?
Anywhere close to 100 miles. If it's like got a lot of climbing in it, no shot.
So wherever we find it, where we can land it, like where they have to play some weird judgment, and it goes, we'll let them go like, what is it, 28 for the road ones or the Euro ones?
No,
give them a little extra.
No, it's the class two.
Class something? Okay. But whatever. I think it'd be great. I need to find someone who wants to race it on both sides. Not me. I'm going to film it. But
yeah.
Maybe it's you. Maybe you race it.
I don't want to do
that.
And
then we go and take Keegan. And you and Keegan. This is our race.
Sounds painful. The race would be closer if it was JJ versus me, and I'm on the regular bike. That would be closer.
Really?
Yeah, for sure.
Could we do it?
Keegan. Yeah, we can. Sure, why not?
I'm going to call someone.
Let's do it.
Yeah, we're going to make some phone calls. I like it.
Kind of like the OG Specialized Levo launch or whatever.
Yeah.
With Peter Sagan and the old grandma sprinting up the steep.
Except for the old grandma's JJ and Peter Sagan's you.
That's what, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's like a comparison to that.
I think it'd be a good race, right?
Yeah, depends on the course. Depends on the course.
Maybe we do a test run. Okay. So, all right. Next, think about it. You know what? Yeah. Train. You should train.
Yeah, I'm trying.
All right. We have our guest, only guest. And we've been trying to get her on a few different times. World Cup's kind of, I know she's busy and chasing all that stuff, and you know, she should. It's a lot of work to do those type of things. Cool. So we have her. I'm gonna add right now. Oh, there we go. Can you hear us?
I can.
Perfect. Okay. I didn't want it to mess. I mean, we didn't really do a test before. My top producer working skills here. And yeah, so thank you. I'm glad it works. So you can hear us, no echo or anything?
No, perfect.
Okay.
Incredible.
Perfect. All right, we're good to go. We're just classy over here at the podcast. Top-notch production team. So our guest this evening, day, afternoon, whatever you want to call it, is Elizabeth Walker. And this is a mouthful. LIV Global Sports Marketing Lead and LIV Racing Team Manager. I just wanted to say LIV Factory Racing Team Manager. Just keep it simple. I don't really know. Is that's the best way to describe it?
Yeah, I think so. And you know what? What ends up happening is that it inevitably gets shortened to just LIV, and that's what I call myself, and that's what other people end up calling me too. They're like, oh, you must be LIV. And I'm like, wow, that's a lot to lay on me.
You are Liv.
You are Liv.
No, I am.
Congratulations.
I'm far from Liv. I'm far from Liv. I work with a really amazing team of women. It's interesting. I think that the most visible aspect of my job is the Liv Factory Racing team manager role. But it's actually just a small portion of everything that my role entails. So it might actually be uncommon amongst team managers to work kind of the office side of the job in global sports marketing, in addition to being out in the field with athletes.
I wanted to say Liv Factory Racing. Is it not Liv? Because it just Liv Racing team manager. Is there a reason why for that? Or
yeah. So there's actually two teams that I manage. So Liv Racing is the umbrella term that we refer to the two owned teams that we have in Liv Global Sports Marketing. One of them is Liv Factory Racing, which is our UCI Mountain Bike World Cup team. And then we also have Liv Racing Collective, and this is our syndicate of privateers that compete in triathlon, enduro, lifetime Grand Prix, marathon and gravel, even UCI World Series gravel. There's a little bit more than just the factory team.
Okay, that makes sense then. All right. Well, that's why I couldn't just say Liv Factory Racing.
But the vest says Liv Factory.
Yeah, well, that's the vest does. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, I like it. That's the team shirt for motocross or F1. Like, yeah, you can't really get this or buy it in stores, but I have it. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, I love it. All right, let's. Should we just unfold this UCI thing? I know you're for a lot of the stuff, and I'm sure you watched Jordy's a little bit, maybe heard it, and he's not for it. I didn't quite know that, and you were texting me that and saying that, but I don't know where I'm at. I land in this weird little middle of it. There's some stuff. Let's unfold the first part, that weird document that got leaked, maybe it didn't get leaked. It really got sent out. I'm a little confused on it, right?
That's a leak. That's still considered a leak.
Yeah, okay. It definitely got leaked. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Oh, so you had that document before it came out?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. So someone at Liv Factory Racing sent it out to Pink Bike or not?
Do not put that on me. No.
No. I don't know who leaked it, but if you could find that source, UCI has asked me to find that. I'm trying to pass it along. But some of the wild stuff, like the suspension requirements of the 100 was, I feel like maybe you're a little bit more in tuned on it maybe than Jordy, because as being a team manager, tell us.
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah. Okay. So there are no suspension requirements. That was in there in this document to kind of categorize and further define what they meant by cross country, what they meant by enduro, and what they meant by downhill. So it was a general rule of thumb that it was cross country is 100 to 120 mils ish. Enduro fits that 150 to 170 mils ish, and then downhill is a double crown fork. So, I will back up by saying too that I recognize that there's a lot of this document that I think has been either misinterpreted or I think maybe I just recognize that there's a lot of background information that I don't know and that we don't have access to, and so. I will say that we all did think that originally they were suspension requirements, but all it took was a simple question. Hey, are these requirements? And they said, no.
Okay. So then maybe Pink Bike should have put a little of those asterisks next. I don't know. Whoever posted it, it's tough because we're all trying to unfold this. And I think maybe Jordy's frustration with it, which I completely understand, is like the communication seems a little like worse now that Warner Brothers has it. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like you have a better communication with them, but maybe not for all team managers, or it's not going in the direction of some of these people. Maybe unfold that a little bit. Like, are you getting better communication than in the past, or where's the relationship?
Oh, that's a loaded question.
on the spot right now.
Yeah. Okay. It's multifaceted. So, first of all, there is this organized group called IMTTO. It's led by Martin Whiteley, who has held many positions in cross country and downhill over the years. Currently, he works with the Frameworks team, Nico Mullally's team, as a team manager operations guy. But he also runs this collective organization. IMTTO stands for International Mountain Bike Trade Team Organization. So those
that's
of us, yeah, I think that's even worse than my title. So M2 is what we call it. So M2, if you are a member of M2, you do have a liaison. Martin is that person, the liaison to communicate back and forth through the UCI as well as Warner Brothers Discovery. Within M2, so this is made up of primarily elite team managers only on the cross-country side. And there are some non-elite teams that also have membership here. So within M2, there's also an executive committee. I'm a member of this executive committee. So there are five of us who are kind of the representatives of all the other teams. And that allows us to meet and get things done a little bit more efficiently than if we had to bring the entire membership together all the time to take a vote or to take action. So the privilege of being in this M2 role and working closely with Martin is that I do have very direct access to Paul Beals, to Beth, to Lisa, and to Chris Ball. I will say I have to hand it to them here. They are quite accessible at the races too. If you know who you're looking for, they are out about and around. And generally speaking, they're more than happy to field questions and to help clarify things. I think, you know, just thinking about this from like from a human perspective, if information that you have put out in trust gets leaked, or you get your teeth kicked in all the time because people are misinterpreting it and getting angry, perhaps the lesson here is that you don't get access to the same amount of information, because I mean, that's human nature, right? Like, we want to protect ourselves. So, you know, I would say that the communication is there if you want it, but we're not necessarily entitled to information, especially when we've abused the privilege in the past. I'm saying we as the collective whole, for team managers and athletes.
Yeah. Okay. So that, I mean, we all made the comments on it, like, this clearly wasn't supposed to go out.
Yeah.
Right. Without being able to be in a group setting, let's have a little bit of a conversation.
And it just wasn't complete.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
But this also seems very, just kind of, it coincides closely with other things that are happening right now in the world. And when we're overwhelmed with all of this information, people, like we were talking about earlier, briefly, just people want to be negative. And that's kind of the
Pink Bike moral probably got the most views ever from that. So let's just be real, right?
Pink Bike is full of internet trolls and people that just want to complain and yell about everything, no matter if it's positive or negative. And that's unfortunate, but it's the truth, and it's kind of what human nature is kind of doing at this time. And yeah, I don't know that much about all of this, and I haven't seen the official one. I'm kind of scrolling through it quickly here, but I'm curious to see what happens for good or for worse. But I know that they're trying to figure it out, and at the end of the day too, they're trying to figure out how to grow the sport and make themselves more money.
So that brings me on to the next thing. Do you agree or maybe so Jordy, obviously the phrase is F1 racing without the F1. Where are you at on that, right? Like, should we just stick to keeping people on bikes that are already on bikes, or it's a weird area, right?
Yeah, I think it's complicated, and I'll go back to my original statement that I think that there is a lot of information that we don't have or considerations that we can't necessarily see. So I will say that I believe that Warner Brothers Discovery does have overall the best interest of the sport in mind. You know, there's so something that you all may not know, and perhaps your listeners also don't know, is that I both teach leadership and organizational behavior, and I also study it in a doctoral program right now. So I'm working on my Doctor of Education in Global Sport Leadership at East Tennessee State University. And this semester, I'm in a class on organizational behavior. And the irony.
You just brought this letter there, or this document, and or this post.
Totally. Yeah, careful telling us all that, too. You never know how.
Yeah, I know, totally. Somebody's going to be like, she doesn't know what she's talking about. So, you know.
No pressure.
Organizational change is unbelievably difficult, and it doesn't matter what the organization is. So it could be an organization of 20 people. It could be an organization of 200 or 2,000 people. Organizational change is hard. And
no one likes change.
Right. Yeah. Well, right? You know, especially rapid change. People highly resist rapid change because what it does is it creates the perception or reality. We don't know the perception or reality of scarce resources. So when you are experiencing or perceiving a threat to something you value, you latch onto whatever you can to try to control it. And sometimes that looks like being negative or being a troll or lashing out or making unethical or just crazy decisions or behaviors. So this is just to like give some background. These are the lenses that I'm kind of looking through all of this like at. And so I think that Chris and Warner Brothers Discovery do have the best interests of our sport at top of mind. And there are going to be people who are negatively affected by the direction they want to take the sport, especially because it's happening rapidly by comparison. It's such a massive shift from the way that UCI basically organized and managed races with local organizing committees. And Red Bull was just a broadcasting partner. I do think when I look at the start line, even in, I only manage women. So I'm looking at just U23 women's field and women elite field. Those fields are huge. And there's this rule called 80% rule in XCO where basically if you're far enough back that you risk being lapped, you get pulled out. I believe it was Leger this year. The winner was so fast that there were only, I want to say, 40 people that finished that race.
I think it was less than that, right?
It could have been. It could have been like 32 or something like that.
I thought it got up to like 28 for some reason. I don't know why I'm thinking.
It was insane. So while, you know, everyone has a bad race and it's entirely possible that, you know, any team's athlete could get cut at 80% at any time. What I believe they're trying to do is mitigate how many people are on the start line so that it makes for a more dynamic and exciting race. Ultimately, that affects viewership, and that ultimately affects sponsorship and partnerships, and the values of teams and the brands that sponsor them. So I totally get it from the commercialization standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's what fuels the sport. I mean, no one's watching if it's just a boring race and they also want to keep the leaders where all the eyes are watching and paying attention to in a as controlled natural environment as they can to duke it out with the people that they're racing against, not having lappers get in the way and causing issues for certain racers and stuff. And I mean, I feel like that one shouldn't be too big or too controversial of a
unless you're
ad
below
or
that 80%.
No, but honestly,
that's who leaked the document.
But those people, I think, are kind of delusional. If they're thinking that they're going to get more sponsorship dollars or visibility from being lapped in a pro race, I think you're just really not looking at the big picture in an unbiased fashion. Because I get it, you want to finish the race, and it's prideful to be on the lead lap and stuff. But
it
you're not what matters at that moment.
Yeah. And they are providing a solution to this. We haven't heard much information about it yet, but I think the regional events. Yeah,
correct?
Exactly. These continental and regional events, they are providing a solution to that. And I do think, you know, there could be some riders who go to these races and I think like, yes, I'm finally going to ride a World Cup. And there's something there. However, you know, considering the appropriateness of putting someone who is not at the same caliber of the people who are in, let's say, the top 10 or the top 20.
Oh, 100%.
It almost makes it dangerous in that sense.
It does. Yeah, we had this big issue in motocross for sure. And then because there really anyone could get a pro license. Mm. And then someone made a pretty funny video of showing people out there that shouldn't have been out there. And they were hitting hay bales, hitting walls, almost getting landed on. And even today, we have three separate groups of pro practice at a pro motocross race, which you've already had to earn your pro license because we won't even let the top factory seated, or not seated people, but that race won't even practice the same day with those other riders because it's dangerous. Different levels of speed on a same course at the same time does invoke danger.
I mean, like, this is like cross country specific, but same thing. That's why they separate men's and women's practices. They're moving at different speeds, and there are mixed practices to, you know, allow for men's and women's teams or athletes to train together. But then riders, you know, hopefully are making the smart decision of when they should be practicing.
Yeah. And do you think maybe with this new, also some of the new rule changes is one is making it. And I've always had, this is the toughest thing I've had to deal with watching XC. It really hurts when I love Pitcock. Don't get me wrong, but he comes in for a few races, kicks everyone's ass and then leaves. Does this new situation with teams and how it kind of is, do we get more superstars just to stay? Which I'm not saying, you know, that we don't have those now, but it's tough when your superstar gets beat by a superstar from another genre. Does this maybe make it a little bit, you know, closed off to that? And then I would say it's probably hard for them to promote a little bit in the cross country world with that, right? Is this, you think that they're a little bit of the reasoning that they're hoping that it makes it that way?
This is super interesting. So the elite team is changing to World Series team next year. And priority, unless you are in the top, I can't remember the exact number, let's say 17 teams based on points. And that's between men and women. So like, personally, as a women's only team,
it's tough for you guys, right?
I'm at a disadvantage already. So fingers crossed that we make it into those top 17.
Or that they change that rule a little bit.
Maybe, but there's three wild cards, which, you know, if we aren't in the top 17, we can put in for a wild card entry. But the catch here is that if you accept being a World Series team, whether you get it by points or you get it by wild card, you have to have one athlete start at every single event. So let's take Ineos, for example. If Tom Pidcock isn't starting at every single event, then somebody else needs to come in and start at those events for Ineos to have elite team status.
I just wanted to add that they have to have a minimum of three riders on the team to begin with.
Yeah.
Regardless of if they're starting.
So what happens to Pitcock?
Yeah. So either he's given an event specific wild card for the events that they show up, or to be honest, Ineos doesn't need to be an elite team. So if they're showing up with one athlete to just, let's say, the European rounds, like let's say they forgo North America and they forgo Brazil. So they've got five events that they're showing up. They have an RV. They stick out their awning. They can park that anywhere. They could park it in the hotel parking lot, and they don't need to even pay for the paddock fees, the 10 meters by 20 meters.
Are they doing that now? Are they not paying the paddock fees and doing that? Sorry.
I think that Ineos was was an elite
team. I'm not
team
saying
this
them,
year.
But is their teams doing that
yeah,
right now?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So
is it space or is it just they're totally being dicks?
No, it's totally space. So the local organizing committee. So let's take Leogang, for example. The people who are putting on the business that's putting on the race in Leogang, they have to pay. I mean, the last time I looked at this, it was like 300,000 euros just to put in the bid to host a World Cup. And then they also have to cover, oh my gosh, don't quote me on this. Okay. I think that they also need to cover staffing. They need to cover local marketing. They need to cover prize money. They need to cover all these things. So paddock fees is one of the main ways, that and ticket sales, where local organizing committees can earn some of that money back. So I want to say for non-elite teams, like just UCI team, national federations, and then privateers, they pay, I want to say, 10 euros per square meter of space to have an official paddock space. If you're an elite team, you get 80 meters square free. So, you know, that is, you know, one benefit is that you get cheap or free paddock space if it's 80 meters squared or less when you're at an event. But if you don't want the increased fee that it's going to cost to register as a UCI World Series team, aka elite team, if you don't necessarily need the paddock space and it just doesn't work out financially, Tom Pidcock has enough points to be able to enter a World Cup race on his own because he's within the top, let's say, 100 of the UCI ranking. And because of
Vanderpool
who he is
there now, because he's kind of a little bit out.
Totally, totally. So, well, this takes us down this whole
loopholes.
Other. Oh my gosh. Yes, exactly. So we saw at the World Championships in 2023 in Scotland, where the president of the UCI just kind of like let people start in the grid higher up than they should have. There was a
I did remember that. And there was drama.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. And I think it's relatively still unsettled. I mean, I cannot pronounce his last name, Peter, the president of the UCI. Just kind of made a unilateral decision. And I think that that's super dangerous because it sets a precedent for that to happen again. And without it going checked by, say, a union or collective bargaining style organization, it perhaps, yeah, it sets the precedent that it could happen again.
All right, so I'm going to dissect a little bit of this. And
we just covered a lot.
We did. All right. So first off, I can understand why Jordy or some of these managers are a little bit torn in the F1 situation. That's why this all sounds F1. There is, and I put on big, large events and other genres. You are spending some money to put these things on. And when it starts hitting a million and you're like, oh shit, are they coming or not coming? Guaranteed, not guaranteed. This locks you into being guaranteed. You know what you have before you go there. You know you're spending. This is going to help that. But I can completely understand why people would look at me and be like, you're the devil. You're making so much money. And I'm like, okay, where have you been the last couple months when I had to put out the $500,000 to get this event to happen? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They are that. And that's rough. Totally understand that. But on another hand, if we don't have these regional events treated maybe okay, and I bring this up with that a little bit less information and not providing is Ty Cady, perfect example. I've had conversations with him, not to blow him out. He's been shitted on by the UCI on some stuff, and I've been there. I've yelled at the UCI guy that they've sent as a ref because he's doing kind of weird choices, and I felt he was doing them for himself type of things. Regional events like Ty Cady need to happen. How do we give them a little bit? They need to figure out that communication with USA Cycling and whatever it is, whatever the federation is that they're in their country. I don't know. I don't go to Europe. I'm guessing the European races are better. The ones here in the US, let's just be straight. They fucking suck sometimes because they are treated secondhand in some level. So maybe that's where I lack a little bit of confidence in some of this of like, we're treating the regional ones like shit. They're downgrading them or doing whatever they are. They're not treating them well enough, I feel like. And then when you put in so much restrictions on the high level ones, if that makes sense, you're like, are we crushing some dreams? Are we hurting the sport a little bit? Where do we find this nicer? How do you deploy it better? Maybe if that makes sense. And that's maybe why he did that. Oh, you're just going to put this person here, right? And this level. It's weird. I don't know. I don't think there's an answer for it. But like I'm sure you probably have to deal with a little bit of that, right? Like, what do they need to hire? Maybe a few, I don't know. It's money. It's all money. At the end of the world, everything's money, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah.
I'm sure you see it a little bit, right? Like follow a lot of the U.S. racing and call it endurance racing XC. And everyone I've ever talked to just seems like it's just been shitted on. Right. And we've just left it for dead. And then if you're a promoter, you're basically spending your own money to help these people get to their points. So it's a little tough. Or is like the UCI going to start handing out money? Like, okay, maybe we should cut some fees for Ty so this works better to get more people in and building those races. Like, do you know if there's any of that coming down the line? Do you feel that should come down the line? What is your feelings on that?
Yeah. I think that I don't know of any current plans for, let's say, like profit sharing or any kind of financial support to teams and athletes. I do hope if we look at other sports, this happens. And even I will say in XCO, it happens at some of the more continental or regional races. There are individual race promoters who will pay the costs of your team or your athletes to come and race, because they recognize the importance of having that high level of competition, or they're trying to meet a minimum number of high level athletes to gain a certain status with the UCI, like HC, C1, C2.
Yeah.
So I do hope down the line that there is more support that comes from probably at this point Warner Brothers Discovery, since they hold the commercialization, marketing, broadcast. Like, they hold so many roles in this relationship with XCO, World Cup, mountain biking, and downhill as well. So I do think that should happen. Whether or not it will, I don't know. But it's super expensive to be able to run these sports and to move equipment from continent to continent to continent. I do think that we are going to see more continents join in on the schedule as perhaps as early as 2026. I know that is a goal.
Okay, Arkansas. We know what you're saying.
Yeah. Puerto Rico, we're coming at you. but I think that everyone in any relationship wants to feel fairly valued, right? And if you look at it from an organizational behavior standpoint, people do their best work for you when they feel fairly compensated. And compensated can be expanded beyond finances. It's like time off or support or professional development or all kinds of things. So if we take that concept and apply it here.
Unless you work in America, there's none of that.
Yeah.
It's gone.
In my next life, easy, I'm moving to Switzerland. But I think that I think that there's going to be more conflict that happens, or at least continues, if there's not greater transparency between Warner Brothers Discovery and teams. I think that Warner Brothers Discovery could find themselves in trouble if they are taking unilateral decisions. And this is, FIFA just got sued months ago over unilateral decision-making, specifically regarding an unsustainable calendar. So I think that we can look at other sports and say, this could go down this direction or this direction, depending on how the person at the top, and let's say this is Warner Brothers Discovery and the UCI together, how they decide they're going to move forward in terms of support and communication with athletes and teams.
Yeah. And it's tough. You can't talk to everyone.
Right. Totally. Yeah. And that brings up a great point about how like everyone has an opinion, but not everyone's opinion is weighted equally. Right.
Oh, 100%. Why do we have social media? It's dangerous. It's gone out of control for sure. There's not enough behind the scenes, and I don't know enough behind the scenes, but I've came from a sport from behind the scenes, and the targets on your back for situations of like what you guys are going through right now is out of control. And I can feel for them a lot. It's tough. It is scary. I'm in this one. So I just want it to be good.
Yet here we are on a podcast sharing our opinions that really don't matter.
Obviously, apply to us. everyone else.
For sure. I don't care. People already hate me. I'm not scared. It's interesting. I was hoping that you guys would have a little bit more better welcoming arms for doing some of these changes, because I see a little bit of it and like where you guys are going. You guys are just in a tough area, right? And then explaining people the bigger picture. I have this issue because I help I help Rob over at Big Mountain Enduro, and as you know, Enduro is kind of in this weird funk of an area, right? And even though it's probably the most, trail bikes are probably the most sold bikes for a Bright brand, right? And
sure,
we've just destroyed the Enduro scene. And but how do you commercialize Enduro? And then it's just such a weird area. So it's a tough, it's a cycling in all full round circles, going through some shit right now, you know?
Yeah, totally. It really is. And I think that, you know, Enduro, it is really interesting here where what it does is when you can't broadcast live Enduro, then the onus of commercializing athletes falls on the brands. We have been in just a really stale or declining industry environment for, I mean, it feels like forever, but it's been since 2020. And when, it's like, oh my gosh. It's been almost 5 years, which, you know, that's a long time, but it's only 5 years. But in any case, so the onus is on brands to make these athletes heroes, to be able to tie that, you know, athlete creates community, community creates brand affinity, if brand affinity creates sales, like this whole thing. So when downhill and cross country athletes, and you have it easy because it's served to you on a silver platter, more or less. The onus doesn't have to fall squarely on the brands. So when you look at categories that you're going to sponsor, the business decision is, how much bandwidth do I have? How many resources do I have? And where does it make sense to invest? And if Enduro costs the exact same amount as cross country or downhill, but you get less ROI and the onus is back on you, it's like,
So then it doesn't cost the same, because now it costs more to create these heroic figures in it.
Yeah.
And that's where you lose all point of investment, and it just doesn't get any prettier. And that's the problem. It really is. And that's why I think a lot of these Enduro guys are turning to, or having their sponsors push them to do more social media, and people don't know what that means or what that really is. It doesn't just mean posting more or whatever, and it's turning into a whole different category of racer. But it's a shame, as somebody that took to Enduro and liked it and loved it and still will compete in Enduro racing and stuff, it's a shame that
you just won't compete in e-Enduro because it's done.
Yeah, sorry.
For now.
On pause. For now.
EXC. Now, you could have a future in EXC.
Hold on. Is there an EXC category coming?
Oh, yes. My God. Well, no. It actually is also dying. But EXC has...
I can understand why. I'm sorry.
EXC
maxed out at
20
miles an hour. Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So EXC has existed for a long time. There's even EXC World Cup, and EXC happens at World Championship.
Sorry.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Peter Sagan's raced it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
That's how he got a heart condition. It's fucking hard.
Yeah, wow. Totally. Like, basically, they're riding up all the fun downhill stuff.
Yeah. True.
I know too much on that topic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Tell us more.
No.
All right. So we have a question for you from DVO in the chat, New Zealand. You might.
Oh, no.
maybe married to someone. Don't know. They're
asking. This is a good one.
Yeah, it is a good one. Yeah, look, if you could delete or get rid of any UCI rule, which one would it be? No pressure.
Gosh, this is so hard. I think that,
your parking spot to be closer.
Okay, there's actually rules I would add. But
it's going the other way. It's going the other. Sorry. We're sorry.
Jesse.
I didn't want to say, hey, you said his name. I didn't say it. That's
so
look
I
him
think
up.
So cross country has been so just like totally buttoned up and super professional, which I think is important. The reason why downhill has kind of exploded in terms of grand heroes is one, they're like in cross country,
personalities.
You can imagine yourself racing on that course. You're like, yeah, I can do that. When you watch downhill, you're like, no, I definitely cannot do that, at least not me. So there's that. there's personalities, and then the way that they are able to change their kits and their bikes constantly to embody that personality for both themselves and the brand, I think that is so special. And so the rules around this, I can't say that I just know, but when I do a team registration with the UCI, I submit one kit design. And I think that there are workarounds here. I've seen specialized.
Oh, but you have to get the kit design approved.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So Downhill has always kind of like lived in this, like, we don't care, we're going to do it anyway kind of realm. And I think that an area where brands and athletes, an opportunity for expansion, for exposure and commercialization of brands and athletes is to have limited edition kits, you know, every race or every couple of races. And then same thing with the bike. So let's say.
What are they worried about?
So.
Great question. Yeah,
no one
idea.
Knows. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
I actually think that this is stated somewhere on this thing, and I'm trying to find it, that there will be because
I feel like they should definitely have this open.
There's no mandatory matching kits
on
anymore.
Teams, but you have to still teams. The fact that you have to submit it is a little weird.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I believe that this did show up on this reform and rule changes.
Some sort.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. I'm 100% for that.
Okay, so you would delete the rule that you have to send in your kits before.
There you go.
That's what we'll go with.
That's a good way to answer.
Yeah, I think so. I think.
But she would. She wants another rule.
To all
rule.
The UCI rulemakers that are listening to our podcast right now, there you go. Let's change it.
Every UCI rulemaker knows that I'm a rule follower.
So I'm a bit more of a.
What's the fine for doing that? Is there a fine?
Okay, so that's also really interesting. So we've. I love this because like. It all comes down to like what resources you have and what's worth it, right? So it's a measure of impact.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because like MJ with the shoes, right? They just took the fine.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So unless they're dangling the carrot of your rider can't start, that's when you're like, ooh, okay, maybe I better button this up.
Because you got a different kit. I would think that's a little wild.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. So no, I don't think that is necessarily realistic in this sense. But
until now you got the target on your back.
No. Oh, yeah. And actually, I got the UCI president's name wrong. His name is David, not Peter. I mean, we're just like working down the biblical names here. Like next, we're gonna call him Jesus, which is maybe how he acts sometimes. I don't know.
It's over. Your career's
totally
done.
Took it
it's over.
Yeah, but he.
How
just,
dare you talk against the people?
Makes rules and then they happen. I don't know.
I'm
David.
Not getting approved for a media pass after this, so it's okay.
Sorry. David, come find me. Let's have a conversation.
Oh my gosh. Oh my god, David. Who the last name we don't know.
Well, I know it. Yeah. I'm like staring at it. I just can't pronounce it. It's French, and so I won't even try because the French look down their nose when you try to speak French. They're just like. Why don't we just speak in English?
I can't even speak English, so it's okay. I butcher everyone's name. Luckily, you have a very easy name.
Yeah, yeah.
Easiest of all.
Totally.
The most American name of all.
Very Anglo-Saxon.
Almost two first names, I would say. I think you could fight for that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, okay.
So, cool. So in wake of Jesse's glass house empty... kind of question. I would like to turn it and ask what is one of these new changes that you're most excited about? Look at it in a positive way, because I think there is some good to be found within this for any discipline here. And where do you see that the UCI Discovery here is like really genuinely trying to progress the sport?
Okay, so in total transparency, I scanned through the new rules when they were released like a couple of days ago. And gosh. I believe some things that I saw that I was like, yeah. U23 points counting towards team ranking and U23 athletes getting prize money.
Well, yeah, you guys won them straight. I get it. Let's get real.
Yeah. No, but I think that's important.
Where the shoe fits.
Yeah, exactly. I think I think when, if we look at shrinking the start size for races based on how many elite teams and who can enter, then we need to be able to provide equitable support and reward to both teams and U23 athletes by saying like, hey, these people still matter here. We need to develop, we owe it to them to help develop them into strong elite athletes. And so
sometimes U23 is better to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you get the behavior you reward, right? So if we want teams to support U23 and developing athletes, then being able to provide those U23 athletes with financial reward in addition to having their points count towards team ranking is a great way to do that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Not that the permanent sense. Numbers.
Yeah.
You don't like that. You gotta like that. It's crazy. The number one every weekend transferring to people. What the fuck is that? Come on.
I mean, like, I don't
it's
know.
It's not Moto, Austin.
But almost every other sport, they have permanent numbers.
That's okay, so then, yeah, I'm totally supportive of it. Yeah, I mean,
you can't.
I think,
well, look, you can build a brand off of that.
Such a small thing.
For sure.
A rider can build a brand off of that, right?
And you guys can. Kits, you can put a number on the back of the kit. Yeah, for sure you can do those things. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not for or against
it. Because it's hard, right? I'm sorry. I watch XC. A person has a different number in the next weekend. And I'm like, okay. That's fucked.
Yeah. It does at least take the stigma away. So I know Linda Indergand is asleep right now, so she is not watching this, but earlier this season, she got really
just
upset.
Send her the invite. Let's go.
Sorry, Linda, I'm outing you right now. She got really upset about what her start number was at the second race of the year. And I was like, it's just a number. Because up until next year, it was based on your ranking and your position in the UCI points plus the whole series. So having a higher number was basically like a slap in the face. Like, you're sucking and you're getting worse. So by being able to just pick a number and that's your number and it has no weight on how well or not well you're doing, I think that it is actually positive for the mental health of athletes.
Yes. See?
Depending on the athlete.
So I love it.
Moto.
Thank you for bringing this to my attention.
No, but also, Austin, it is slightly moto because the 250 points are driven directly off of
that. But a guy has the same number for the whole season.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm with. You can get behind that. Michael Jordan, 23. You know it. I don't know if you'll have it for your whole life. I think you could. You give Nino a permanent number. I think he deserves it.
Yeah.
But minus that, I there's something to be said for that type of stuff and people building their brands and knowing that type of stuff. And that helps for teams, I would say, right? Like, if you're a Dodgers fan and you get the guy that gambles a lot and you put him on your team and you pay him a lot of money, no, I guess no one knows what I'm talking about. But
Shohei Ohtani, okay. Yes.
Yeah, you've heard this stuff, right?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I follow baseball. Absolutely.
Oh.
Huge baseball fan.
I don't
fan.
Follow it. I just hear it in the news because it's some great news.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying this helps. I feel like there's only a few people that are uniquely branded in cross-country racing. You have a lot of branding recognition in downhill, where I think you guys would agree, right? There's not as much in XC, which is disappointing, right? And I'm like, who the fuck is that?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's for sure a big opportunity, I think. And I also think that what I also hope that this goes towards is and I believe that it is that there's going to be greater marketing and commercialization efforts on the side of Warner Brothers Discovery by helping teams and athletes and brands capitalize on those things.
As they should, really.
So, okay, talk to me a little bit about this, having the team and someone racing. Let's go. I want to go a little bit back to that. Okay, so you are Pitcock. I just want to use him as the example. What are we, which I'm like, okay, so you got the Olympics. Are we just going to see those Olympic years going to be like that where he's figured out some loophole, how he can get in it and race? What do we see from this? I mean, I would love it. Pitcock just done with the tour, which he never will be. And then we're racing XC. you know, are we going to, what do you see? What do you think?
I think that every team is going to be running numbers to strategize what the best plan of attack is. And every team is also going to look very different based on what their goals as a team and a brand are. So
yeah,
for me and for Liv, the priority is to be a UCI Mountain Bike World Series elite team. And I will commit to having an athlete at every single event. And I'll be supportive of Warner Brothers Discovery's marketing and commercialization efforts. Because I see that as a brand, as an individual, as a team, that that benefits us. The more I work with them, the better it benefits us and our brand. But Liv is in a very different business position from even Giant, from Specialized, from Trek, from Enios, or even Lidl Trek if they come in. And they're bringing more road athletes into mountain bike. So as long as your athletes have a certain level of ranking with UCI, they have a right to start at the World Cup. Same thing if the National Federation selects them and registers them, they can also enter. In that case, the National Federation kit must be worn, and there is no way we're ever going to see Tom Pidcock racing in the National Federation kit except at World Championships. So I think that the team behind Tom is going to strategize based on basically competing in the bare minimum to make sure that he stays perhaps within that top 100 ranking if they're not going to apply to be an elite team or they don't accept an elite team status. They just make sure that he stays in that top 100 of the ranking so that he can enter any race at any time and wear his team's kit. I don't think that we're going to see Tom Pidcock at every single race. I think that is squarely on the road, and that's where the money is too.
I would even argue that.
Yeah.
I would say that the brand of Tom Pidcock is not a roadie, not an XC rider, not a cyclocross guy. It's the reason why he's
winner.
The reason why he's so loved, the brand, the heroism of Tom Pidcock is that he can do it all.
Yeah.
And same with Vanderpool. It's a very similar thing. So it is in their best interest to have him do the tour, have him do these road races, have him do the Olympics.
I mean, Vanderpool did make a comment that he would like to race the whole season.
I'm sure he would. That's more fun. I'm sure it's probably way more entertaining for him than it is racing road, but he's having more success on the road. There's a lot more money in it on the road. And I'm sure his team, he's got a whole squad of people behind him saying, hey, we need to make as much money as we can for you in these next X amount of years, and this is how we have to do it. You can raise some XC here and there, but that's not at the moment. It's not going to happen. It doesn't make sense. But we'll
all
see.
Right.
We'll
see. Just made Nino's year bigger or more lifespan. I don't know how to explain it. Yeah, that's the best way. But okay, so are you bummed about the U23 if it's like a triple header weekend? They're not showing it on the broadcast anymore? Or how, hurt a little? It hurts me a little. I don't know.
Yeah, so actually this was something that we discussed at length in our IMTTO group. And I do actually appreciate that Warner Brothers Discovery came to us and asked, hey, if you had a choice, would it be U23 has fewer rounds, but they're all televised? U23 has the same amount of rounds, but they're not all televised, or something else.
Okay, so they talked to you guys about this.
Yeah, they really did. Okay. So, I mean, I think that if they felt ultimately they have the veto card, right? So if we all felt strongly one way and they didn't, I could totally see them being like, thanks for your input, but no thanks. That's the privilege of being the person at the top, right? But they did. They came to us and they said, hey, we're curious what you think about this. What's your preference? And I actually voted for more rounds or the same amount of rounds for U23 and less televising. And the reason is because as the team manager and my personality, I want to have control.
You need those points.
Yes. I want to control. Yeah,
you need those
which
points.
Races my U23 athletes go to and which ones they don't. So I can already say I've got two U23 athletes coming in next year. And both of them are currently planning on skipping Valnord. It's a one-off event kind of in the middle of the season. And they both have, one of them has a national championships directly after. And by skipping Valnord, it basically extends the break time in the middle of the season. It's possible that Valnord was never going to host a U23. I don't know. But I want to be in control of helping guide them to their what their ideal schedule is based on their training and goals, and also mine with the team, versus not having that control at all and being told which races they are allowed to start at.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was all on YouTube and it was easier to access.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
What do we do? I mean, have they had discussions? I'm guessing. Okay, so from the news that I know from my side on TV rights, they had obviously a little problem shopping this stuff around to get proper TV coverage. And that's probably maybe the sole issue. Everyone just wants to be able to watch the races. Luckily, I have some access to it, but I'm not everyone else. What has this been a topic? I think, what are they doing about this, you know?
I think that cycling in general is a much bigger sport outside of the United States, outside of North America. So in places like Europe, they have already been paying for access to watch sports through Eurosport and things like that. So paying for access to be able to watch sports isn't necessarily a new thing. And it isn't for us either, but cycling ranks higher in terms of what they're enthusiastic to watch in Europe than it does here in the U.S. And I can't really speak for Canada, but I would assume it's probably something super similar. So for us, it feels outrageous that we would now have to pay a membership for a station.
We got it free for so long.
Yeah, totally.
So I get it.
Yeah, for sure.
I get it.
For sure. So I think that...
But it's HBO Max, but you couldn't get every round on there, or could you?
I don't know, because I was there.
Hold on. Whoa, you're team manager. You live in America. Don't give me this.
I was live. I was staring at it in the face. I wasn't watching it on TV. I will say, there are some team managers. I think that this is like, this is like next level trackside coaching. There are some team managers that have their phone out, and they're watching the race. They're watching live timing, and they've got a radio going on, and they're saying something the athletes have been, like, passed along. I don't have the capacity to do all that. I just watch the race as it's happening in front of me.
When is Dartfish coming in? Do you know what Dartfish is?
No.
You don't know?
No.
Okay, never mind.
No, tell me. Now you can't do that.
Okay. In other sports, there's this software called Dartfish, and basically you film every rider through the section, rider, athlete. And then you see where they're faster or not faster.
Ooh.
So then you can tell.
It basically shows ghosts.
It shows ghosts of everyone coming through. So if you see how Nino hits it, and then you have your rider come through and they're not as fast, you're like, well, Nino's hitting it on the left side. This is why you need to hit it on the left side.
Oh, that is so cool. Oh, man.
I'm sure they I bet you the couple top downhill teams have to be using Dartfish. I feel like there's some level of it going on. Maybe not?
Yeah, for sure. I know that. For sure, in cross country, as well as in downhill, there's a significant investment in technical coaches, and then more specifically in downhill, although some cross country teams use it, telemetry. So using math and time to be able to determine what is fastest. I think my opinion is that numbers certainly matter, but they don't tell the whole story. So if an athlete is faster on a certain section, but it's not sustainable over time, the risk is that, you know, they blow up by riding this faster line and then they actually get slower later on. Or it's a riskier line where they're going to crash or, you know, something like that. So, we've previously worked with Oscar Saez, who's with Giant and lived for a really long time. He's now working over at Trek. Something super exciting is we're bringing Ray Morrison over to Live Factory Racing next year as our technical coach. And something that she does is she goes out, and I'm usually with her. She rides the track a few times. I'm not riding. I'm on the side of the track, and I'll time a couple sections
with Darkfish
for her. Yeah, no. Don't give my secrets away. I play that off super well. No, I do not use Darkfish.
They have an iPhone app. Oh, so I'm just saying.
Okay, so put that on to-do list for later. But I'll time her on a couple of sections, and I'll also be watching to see, like, you know, where the potential risk is and things like that. And we work together, and she works on with athletes and their individual skill and comfort levels to ride particular lines, have A line, B line, C line, you know, good, better, best, those kinds of things. And it's all about riding the track efficiently. So if you imagine at this extremely high level of competition, there are certainly nuances between the power numbers of athletes. Some have higher short power, some have higher long power, you know, whatever. So there are certainly nuances in the numbers, but you can expect that at more or less some level, everybody's power capability is more or less the same, because you don't get there unless you have that high level of power. So then what comes into play is all the little things, riding the track efficiently, having technical handling skills, creating and maintaining speed, using the track where you don't have to pedal, you know, how often you stop in the feed tech zone to get a bottle, all of those things, how well you utilize your nutrition.
It's a strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. So every team has this. And this, you know, going back to Tom and road team and, you know, what the heck are they going to do next year? There are people who get paid a lot of money, not on my team, to strategize what is the best way to win.
No, I that's why I love watching XC or a little bit of downhills. It's not a team sport, but it is a team sport,
yeah.
If that makes sense.
Definitely. Yeah.
That's kind of cool. You can brute force a lot of it, but you can't brute force every win for a season.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, for sure not. For sure not. Yeah. And then, you know, like luck. Sometimes it's just luck.
I'd rather be lucky any day than talent.
Totally.
You know?
Totally.
So it just brings up an interesting aspect. Like, I noticed you guys don't have as many segments. What do they have, like three? Is it on XC, like segments to where you can work that? So that's, I'm bringing back to where you're using a stopwatch, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting to me. This would probably work for the TV broadcast, and I'm just putting myself out of a job here for them. is having segment times on those sections, because it's like we'll see a Nino or a Pitcock just rip that section. It'd be awesome to be like, yeah, every single lap, Pitcock's pushing down 3 seconds faster through this in section, and then it would maybe help a little bit for the broadcast, but then for you guys, it opens that up, right? Like, to have that conversational piece, like, look, you just suck through this section, you got to get faster.
That's like, that could open a can of worms, right? Where all of a sudden everybody has free access to the same information. So strategizing,
it has to be done that way, I think, a little bit.
Yeah.
I like that a little bit better than you on the side with your stopwatch. Don't get me wrong, you're probably good at clicking it. I'm not. But maybe we're getting a little more accurate here. And you, at least the rider can't give you some shit. You know, you'd be like, no, it's right here. It's on the paper.
Hopefully most of my riders aren't giving me shit no matter what. But yeah, for
you're
sure.
The boss. Like, you shouldn't. I'm just saying, I've seen it in other sports.
Yeah, no, for
know?
Sure. For
Coach
sure.
Don't know nothing,
of
you know?
Of course. Yeah, of course. Of course. Funny story. Okay. So, right before Lake Placid World Cup, Linda and Ronya came in a few days early to get acclimated to the time zone. And our physio, Haida, flew into Denver, and she drove across the country with me because we have a service course where I live in Leadville. And so we packed up this van full of all of our stuff, and we drove it across. We had a really great time driving across the country together. And we had a couple of days in Stowe, Vermont, before we picked everybody else up and headed over to Lake Placid. And it's the first time ever that I've ridden with an athlete. So speaking of, like, you know, coach doesn't know, is athletes, like, I think they know that I'm a rider, but they have no understanding of what I am capable of on the bike. So we go down this downhill, and I can more or less keep Ronya in my sight. And we get down to the bottom. She goes, wow, Liz, you're pretty fast. And I'm like, Thanks. Turns out I can and What's do up? Ride bikes. Yeah, totally.
You're just out here retiring riders. Sure. Listen to you.
For sure.
Oh, man. But, I'm benching you this week and you can't beat me down this section.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But I think, like, you know, it's ultimately my policy or my MO is that I end up giving control of decision making over to the athletes. There are some athletes out there who like to play the blame game. It's also human nature.
Every team, everyone. Yeah, this is every sport. This isn't just you guys.
For sure,
so don't.
For sure. So when it comes to tire choice, tire pressure, whether or not we're using Cushcourt inserts, Fox suspension, like how many tokens do we have in there, or volume reducing spacers. So like ultimately it's the athlete's choice, because we need them to be 110% confident in their decision. And that's also with line choice. So even if we know for certain that something is faster, they've made that choice for a reason, and it could be just on the day. It could just be, you know, who knows, for whatever reason. But we make sure that the athletes have 100% full confidence in their own setup, so that if they come back and they had a bad race, they can't point fingers at anybody but themselves.
Good luck. They still will.
Yeah, for sure. For
they
sure.
all do.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no winning with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Athletes will always be it's a mental, like, I could say that you guys are probably at the level of some mental racing, if that makes sense, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
What do they have in their settings next to me, you know, and stuff like that, a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, but definitely. I mean, you know, it's one part of my job that will never fit appropriately or comprehensively on a job description. It is the, like, mental coaching.
Babysitting job?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't so much call it babysitting, because for me, I seek to hire athletes who have a high level of emotional awareness and emotional intelligence, so that they're self-sufficient and I'm there to help support them in their goals and dreams. It doesn't always happen.
You should keep looking at it that way, though. I'm saying,
yeah,
I mean, at it as babysitting.
It doesn't
I
always
have kids,
happen.
I get it.
I mean, so there is a little bit of element of, like,
ride the bike.
Pat,
that's what I'm telling.
Ride
the bike.
You did a good job. But yeah, just the, like, the mental aspect of racing. It isn't just show up, put up the circus, tinker with bicycles, clean them, and then send them out and have high watts. Like, that is over.
Unless you're Spencer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's oversimplifying it. It is all that time in between when they're not in between the tape. On the course, where you are investing so much emotional bandwidth into the mental aspect of preparing for and then physically racing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Is it coming to the level of, do you see teams dictating their trainers, dictating what they're kind of doing on the weekdays?
Yeah.
Are you guys? I mean, you see that now.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we see you're not training. Step shit up.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think more and more mountain
Probably
bike
based
teams.
Off
results. Yeah, yeah, yeah. More and more mountain bike teams are going the direction of road in terms of the resources and the level of control that they have over athletes. You know, if you look at the success of road teams, they do this. They're
ride together,
yeah,
train together.
I mean, there's
whatever
certainly
it is.
Some science and some success behind it. There are some teams who have, you know, team doctors on call. There are teams that have performance coaches that are the main trainer of the athletes, or at least the kind of secondary trainer who is part of the athlete's training peaks and is, you know, giving feedback on the training plans to the trainer that the athlete has externally of the team. Yeah, it's certainly moving in that direction for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting you kind of bring that up a little bit, because is it Simon Andreas? How do you say it? You
Simon Andreasen. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was shooting with him one time. I was asking him, I was like, he lives in Spain in the off season and there's not much elevation where he lives. Or I can't remember how he was explaining it. I was just like, how do you go fast then? How do you train without elevation? And he was like, gave me this explanation. But I guess what I'm coming to is like, so then you have people like him that aren't training at the elevation, but then you have someone else on your team that is training at Chris Blevins was on the team at the same time. How do you, it's got to come to a little bit of a dynamic. The only reason I'm bringing this up is because there's this, not everyone's the same.
Yeah.
So then how sometimes the road, and that's maybe why the road model chews great. I would say there's some great athletes that have raced road, and that model has chewed them up and spit them out because, you know, it's gnarly.
Yeah.
Do you see a little fear of that, or do you see a little bit of that now? Like, hey, if you're not on this program, you're fucking not on our team.
Yeah. I think that does worry me a little bit. And I think that, Simon is Danish. So I don't know where he lives in the off season. It could be Spain because, Danish weather is probably not conducive to outside training, but, it's very flat, where he's from. And there's a lot of Dutch and Danish athletes who don't really have mountains readily accessible. But they can still kind of mimic, by use of gears or an indoor trainer, the ability to climb. That's certainly not going to help them with elevation. So they would need to do elevation training in Val Nord.
Sleeping in a tent, I'm guessing. Then.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Some of them might do that as well. But, you know, this is my whole shtick. I think that the way cycling infrastructure was originally designed, so this is like the human infrastructure, the way that teams operate and things like that, it has a very masculine approach because it was only really a male sport for a really long time. So that mixed with, so Tom Pidcock is a standalone. We can consider Matthew in here too. So standalone athletes, Victor Kretzky as well, that can go.
A generational talent.
Yeah. But they're mixing road and mountain bike season. They're getting like lots and lots and lots of training that you can't get anywhere else besides on the road. And then they're coming and they're kicking ass on mountain bike. So naturally, this is like the mental game of like, how many clicks of rebound does that person have? How much pressure does that person have? Same thing is like, oh, well, now I see all these people who have gone to the road or are doing mixed road and mountain bike calendars are succeeding. So I want to do that too. But to your point, not every athlete can physically or mentally handle that capacity and that schedule. So on Live, I try to create an environment.
I mean, okay, so Nino would be a perfect example of that.
Yes. Yeah, totally. Totally. So, exactly. So you have to know yourself. And I'm sorry, most athletes can't be trusted because like
it's true. It's fucking true.
When you are faced with a decision, let's take the Promontana race is a great example where you have A line, B line, and C line. And the A line was freaking scary. And there's all these rocks at the bottom and it's like, ah,
it was
like,
gnarly,
you
right?
You might like lose your teeth for the rest of your life, but it's okay. You're saving 3 seconds. Like there were
half shell.
There were so many athletes that tried that line that shouldn't have, but the behavior that was being rewarded was taking a risk for the benefit of 3 seconds. So if we take that same way of thinking into, well, okay, well, if I can just go and get that capacity on the road, then I can come back to mountain bike and I can clean up. If you don't know yourself well, you may or may not be able to handle that capacity, and it may or may not be sustainable even from a physical or mental standpoint. There are standalone athletes like Tom Pidcock who can handle it. There are some who possibly can't. So what I'm saying is, at least for me on Live, is that I try to create...
Each person, you have to mold them and work with them and
find
what's best.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You create an environment that is supportive of the people that you have on the team and their unique qualities and capabilities within reason. Like, I'm not sitting out here like being like, anything you want, dear. That's not how it works. But
I need that.
But sometimes you have to have the real, real conversation with an athlete of like, are you sure? And sometimes it's the opposite of like, yo, we need to be doing a little bit more. I think that this is the bare minimum. So that's a whole long answer of road is certainly influencing mountain bike, but it's not the answer.
No, that's kind of what I wanted. It's in other sports, it's topic conversation.
Yeah.
You know, they have these, you got, the only way you can be on the team is you got to be the training camp. And then if sometimes those training camps just don't work for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, yeah.
But they're great talents. They get spit up and they get chewed out. you know, I guess they just go to Lifetime, you know?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think I do, you know, okay. Speaking of gravel, so I have gravel athletes. It's really interesting to see how in Lifetime Grand Prix, just the quality of gravel that we have in the United States in Lifetime Grand Prix, it's the mountain bikers more or less that are cleaning up in gravel. Whereas you go to Europe and you're looking at UCI Gravel World Series events, or you're looking at Gravel
Earth
Series.
But isn't it because it's a little bit more road there?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. The quality of gravel is just not the same.
Just, it's different.
Yeah.
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 It's a different type of terrain.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that, I'm okay with it. I'm a mountain biker, so I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's why they come over, and when they do try to do Unbound, they're like, they always try to, I feel like Unbound is the one they land at, and they're like, I'm going to just go for this one. And then they end up being like, holy fuck, this is gnarly.
Yeah. Unbound is a gnarly race. Yeah.
Yeah. Who wants, I'm sorry, I don't want to do that, but yeah.
A lot of athletes don't want to. Spoiler alert, Lifetime.
I've heard.
Not many athletes want to, but they do.
Yeah. I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
Wow. We just really just dug in. I love it. It's great. It's been great. Yeah, I kind of want to, I would love to circle around a little bit closer to the season when it starts up again.
Yeah.
And maybe we go over who's ever on the team, all this type of stuff, and, you know, a bunch of little things. If you're down,
totally.
To go for that.
I'm down. Yeah. Thanks so much. Okay. It's been super awesome to chat with you all. And I don't know, hopefully people listening got some tidbits as well. But yeah, would love to.
We have no one. No one listens to our stuff. So don't worry. Yeah.
I was freaking out that you didn't tell me it was live. And I was like, oh my God, it's a good thing I took a shower today.
Well, Dave was coming to watch. So yeah.
We do have one viewer on YouTube that says this is a great discussion. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So
we got one question, one great thing.
Yeah. I haven't partake much. I've just been listening, honestly. So thank you.
Three likes.
Thanks for coming.
Three likes. They all came when you got on. So apparently no one likes us.
Oh, no.
I super appreciate you coming on. And honestly, you know, it's cool to get the difference in opinion on the stuff and like where it's going. And it seems like there is a direction here. So it's kind of cool to hear that, especially since I'm invested in cycling now. Thank you. Thank you for everything.
Yeah. Thanks, Austin. Thanks, Spencer. It was a real pleasure.
Yeah, thank
and,
you.
Yeah, I mean, let's just see how this unfolds. We'll make some opinions maybe this time next year or in August. But yeah, let's just see how it unfolds.
Yeah, we'll have you back on then. We'll get an end of the season like, oh, fuck. Or
I was wrong. Was great, or so. Like, this is awesome.
We'll do it with you and Jordy, but we'll kind of, well, maybe we'll put some questions.
That'd be
and
fun.
You guys have different answers.
Okay. That'd be fun.
Jordy
each other.
And
I like it.
Jordy is probably not the one viewer on right now, but Jordy and I are friends. I have a funny,
we just hit
funny
more.
Story about this, actually. Do we have time for a funny story? I would love to tell.
Oh,
we
always have. Okay. I mean, honestly, when you were getting off, we were just going to have a little bit more talking for sure.
Okay.
Do it.
So for, oh my gosh, since I want to say the first time I did it was 2016, I've done suspension tuning for OEM product with both Fox and RockShox.
Yeah,
Lyft.
Jordy's probably been there,
yes.
Right?
Yes. So that was the first time I met Jordy. And I think that
we were in
Sedona. I want to say it was like maybe 2017 or 2018. Could have been as late as 2019. I'm not positive. And we're in Sedona. We're doing some suspension tuning for the commercial bikes. And it's like, okay, bing, 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 it's lunchtime. So we all, and that's people doing this for Giant as well as people doing this for Liv. I think there were three of us, myself.
I was there, I think, on this.
Oh, were you? Oh my gosh. Okay. So maybe you won't be surprised by this at all. So it's me, Ludi, and Elise Reinold who are doing this for Liv. And so we were kind of off site.
Hold on. So did Ludi hit a hoop? Or is this the year when they hit the cactus?
Yes. Somebody hit a cactus.
And they wrapped themselves around it, but they've never seen cactus in their life. And they hit a cactus in a crash. Ray was there, right?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe not. I can't remember now.
Keep going.
All I know
story.
Is it
Sorry.
Wasn't me that hit the there. Cactus. But so we pull into the parking
That's
lot.
A good thing.
Yeah, totally. We pull into the parking lot.
You can,
at the
you
hotel.
Can ride. We get it.
I am a great
Damn,
rider.
Damn, shitting on the cactus
I
hitter.
Do not hit cactus. So,
For good reason.
We pull into the parking lot and there's these two sprinter vans there, and somebody, I'm pretty sure it was Frank Trotter, was like, yeah, go ahead and make yourself a sandwich. There's a cooler in the sprinter. So I walk up to this white sprinter and I open up the cooler and I'm like, sweet. Oh my gosh. This is all like Whole Foods. This is amazing. So I'm just like pulling out some bread, like making myself a sandwich. And I'm sitting on the like side of the sprinter eating my sandwich. It was fucking Jordy's sprinter and Jordy's personal stash of Whole Foods.
Yes.
Food. And I have to give it to him. Like,
this is how you met him?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, yeah.
He did not unravel or unleash on me. He just totally accepted it as a thing that happened. And I didn't know, I want to say for literal years until I realized.
Years?
Yeah, years until I was like, oh my God. Now that I know you better, I realize that that was your van. That wasn't like the team van. That was your van. So Jordy and I still kind of giggle about that. So.
That's
wow.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Jordy's a good guy.
Jordy's
yeah,
awesome.
I get it.
That's awesome. Points.
Yeah.
Sure. He totally, but the part that he didn't tell you about is he totally fucked with your suspension for the rest of the week. Totally did.
I deserved it.
I was like, did that work? And she was like, yeah, it was great.
And that's why,
like,
I hit the cactus. Oh, no, I'm just kidding.
Seriously. Yes. And there's a lot there. Fuck up.
So penny.
You got to look out. You got to look out.
Good stuff. Cool.
No, that's awesome.
Thank you for coming on, Liz.
Yeah.
I appreciate
it. Thanks, you guys. We'll do it again soon.
Cool.
Okay.
Sounds good. See ya.
Thank you.
Wow, that was deep. Deep dive.
Honestly, I just kind of apologize. I sat back and just listened there. I feel like I learned a lot. On this.
I learned a lot as well.
Hopefully other people did as well.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, that was Elizabeth Walker from Liv. And that was rad. That was really cool. All right. We were kind of in the middle of a few things. We went over Lifetime. We went Red Bull Rampage, the new podcast voicemail to call in, leave a voicemail, talk some stuff.
What's the number?
Number's +1-805-817-3123.
There we go.
And then we do have an interesting episode coming up. I'm not quite sure exactly when it's going to drop, but I'm flying out to Idaho doing something a little bit unique.
Yeah.
Well, maybe top secret. Yeah. And we'll have something coming up. So, and I won't have my co-host because he's scared of planes and flying. And,
I didn't get invited to this thing, okay?
Damn.
I'm not cool, enough for those people, but it's all right.
All right. Well, I might know some. I can get you in. Make a call. All right, cool. Thank you all for listening. Episode 16. I would like to rattle off all the people that sponsor this. Oh, whoop, no one. So, watch us on YouTube, which is great. Insider MTB. Hit us up on Instagram, a little bit of a follow. Insider MTB once again. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, watch, listen, and that's it. Thanks, y'all. Later.
Peace out. Thanks for listening.